The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, here we are. Let's see. Tuesday. It's one of those weeks where everything's going to be off schedule a little bit because of the Monday. The Monday holiday. There's a big bulletin here. I have no confirmation of it beyond the Hal Turner radio show, but it appears to be credible, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. Look, as we look back on the Russian SMO, the special military operation being fought in Ukraine, Zionist Ukraine, for now just about getting close to 1,000 days. And we're supposed to believe that Russia has not rolled up Ukraine and just stepped on it like a cockroach. This whole thing is ridiculous. Ukraine militarily has no air cover. You can't even talk about air superiority. They have nothing. And they keep holding the Russians fairly close to the original line separating the Donbass in the east from western Ukraine. I mean, if you look at the line of contact, it hasn't changed really all that much. Now with the invasion of Kursk, the Kursk region in Russia, which is a full-out war, military war invasion of Russia, in which Zionist Zelensky and his other Jewish confabulators who run the country have now burned up the lives of over 8,000 more Ukrainian Christian men and lots of women in there. Don't forget, they're drafting women too. So that's going on in Russia now. It's just another bloodbath. It's a ritual sacrifice is what it is. And you don't find many Jews in the Ukrainian military. I guarantee it. They're not there. They don't get drafted. They don't get sent to the front to be slaughtered. So you've got 8,000 dead in the Kursk area already. It'll probably end up being 10 to 12,000. Will Ukraine eventually be pushed out? Yeah, if the Russians want it. But the bottom line is this. Why and how does Russia tolerate so many red lines being stomped upon, shredded, and laughed at? They keep giving warning after warning. All right, now back to the bulletin today. This is from Hal Turner. Russia has now issued, writes Hal, a direct warning to the United States and to NATO that, quote, if Western weapons are used to strike deep inside Russia, the consequences will affect both sides of the Atlantic, end quote. Now, that direct warning was supposedly hand-delivered by a diplomatic courier to the White House today. And it comes after Ukraine began using Western-supplied weapons, as in ours, Storm Shadow missiles, cruise missiles from the UK, etc. It came shortly after Ukraine began using Western-supplied weapons to attack targets, get this one, over 1,000 kilometers deep inside Russia. And after the U.S. said this week, quote, "We are near to an agreement to provide Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles capable of reaching deep into Russian territory," end quote. So here's the U.S. again provoking Putin and the Russians with the threat of providing Ukraine with more long-range weapons. The Brits are giving them Storm Shadow missiles. Anyway, I don't know how much does Russia tolerate? When do they say that's enough? Is this allegedly courier carried and delivered diplomatic message from Moscow that if Western weapons are used to strike deep inside Russia, the consequences will affect both sides of the Atlantic? End quote. Well, come on, let's get real. It's already happening. It's not an if, it's a done deal. Our weapons are being used to attack deep inside Russia. Belgorod has had hundreds of civilians killed by these weapons that Ukrainians use against Russia with no fear of retribution. So it's really not a good situation. I don't know what this particular story ultimately means. There have certainly been numerous causes that would have justified Russia from doing all kinds of things to, quote, balance the books. All right, with us this hour is, I don't know how long I've known David, long time. David Duke is back with us tonight. Hello, my friend. Glad to have you on board, as always.
Hey, Jeff. How are you? I'm sorry. I've been doing some medical treatment for some issues that I have health-wise. And so excuse my voice, but I think that I'm going through this treatment right now. It's pretty tough right now, but I believe I'll be on the way to recovery shortly and be my old self again in the next few weeks. So. But excuse my voice, but I've got a lot to say, and my brain hasn't been affected, thank God.
No, you're shy. We were talking. You're sharp as a tack. Don't worry about the voice. It's plenty good. Well, not a problem.
Let's just dive into it. And it's okay. It's Belgorod, by the way, is the right, or that's what most people pronounce.
Oh, I said Belgorod. I mispronounced it. Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. See, this is what's interesting about all this, you know. I'm not allowed. I used to be on Meet the Press. I was on Meet the Press three times.
Uh-huh.
I was on Good Morning America.
Do you have recording, David? Excuse me. Do you have recordings of those appearances?
Yeah, I do. I do. In fact, I also have recordings.
You should put those up. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to. We have to get the quality enhanced a little bit over the years from these tapes. And that's a long time ago, from the 1980s and 90s. And,
sure.
But. I used to be on these programs a lot, and I'd be one of the few people that, you know, I lived in Moscow for 5 years. I lived in Ukraine for about 2 years. I was completing my doctorate while I was teaching at the University, MAUP University in Kyiv, Ukraine. That's the oldest, it's not the oldest, but it's the biggest university in Ukraine. It has been for a long time, and it's a respected one. There's been 800 graduates and those who came out of the graduate programs of the country that are famous all over the world in their own respective professions, their own respective academic departments and major universities, and even cultural things. I'll give an example. The head of the, I can't think of his name, but the second, there you go, but there you go. But the head of the Vienna Orchestra was a graduate of my university. The former prime minister of the country, who was Jewish, by the way, he was a graduate of my university. But the interesting thing is, whenever they write me in Wikipedia, which should be called Jewipedia, because it's run by Wales, Jews who got a million dollar award from Israel. And while I was there, according to the Jewish Telegraph Agency, he said he's a very dedicated Zionist. And this is the Encyclopedia of the World. This is the place that almost everybody, along with Google search.
It's true. It's so damn corrupted. It's sickening, but it's true.
It's unbelievable.
People go to it.
But anyway, so I was in Kyiv. I was in Moscow 5 years with the great Alexander Solzhenitsyn, anti-communist. And the interesting thing is that the idea that Russia, it was, people are looking at it with horror, that Russia might attack the United States. So I sure don't want to get attacked by Russia with the weapons they have. And they have huge weapons, as many as we do, and effective ones, the hypersonic missiles you can't stop. But the interesting thing is, you have to
don't
be frank
the
about it. And all
the don't forget
listening.
The, David, we shouldn't forget to mention ever the Poseidon torpedo, a huge torpedo which can create an enormous, 2,000-foot high tsunami offshore of any major urban area all along the west and east coasts here. The Poseidon.
They're smart people. Here's the thing. Let's put it what's the way. Biden is not an adult. He's a demented old man. Kamala Harris is an idiot. I mean, Trump is unfortunately many times a blowhard, right? He doesn't really have deep knowledge, and that's why he wasn't really prepared to be president, and he couldn't negotiate. I mean, at least I served a few years in the House of Representatives before I ran for president in Republican primaries, and I did pretty well in those primaries. But but when Trump got in there, and he promised to abolish NATO, but the point is that. This is the truth. I believe it. And it's a hard thing to say, but it's true. But are the leaders of the Western world, so-called Western world, and Russia, there's only one real adult in the room, and that's Vladimir Putin, president of Russia.
A lot of people agree with that.
Here's the situation. He's had certainly justification on a massive level to really bomb Poland, Great Britain, France, and the United States.
Absolutely right, David. Absolutely correct.
Yeah. I mean, but he doesn't want this kind of war. He doesn't want another World War III. Russians lost 25 million people in that war. And that, by the way, you got to realize something, too. The interference since at least the 20th century, or really the middle part of the early 20th century, has been from America into Europe and Russia, not the other way around. Because, the entire Bolshevik movement was completely financed by Jews from New York City and Chicago and these other Jews, like, the guy who was head of the Cantaloupe Company, Jacob Schiff. And these people, these were the biggest finances of communism. That's from the Jewish Publication Society. We know that for a fact, right? They gave millions of dollars, and they supported the Bolshevik Revolution all over the world. Even Winston Churchill, in his own article, said that communism was a worldwide movement by Jews. And in fact, he even quoted Leon Trotsky, the first head of the Red Army, that killed millions and millions of Christians, as well as the Tsar and his family, along with Lenin. Lenin was Jewish too. Kamenev, yeah. Sverdlov, and when they did these things, they were supported by Jewish money from America, amazingly enough. And the First World War had huge Jewish influence behind it because they knew that Germany would line up against Russia in that war because of the way the alliances were panning out. So what they did was they knew that was going to happen. So they did everything they could to cause the war. And by every machination they could do and every sort of crap, they were calling the Germans Huns and all these things. But the Germans aren't Huns. They were Christians, just like British were Christians and French were Christians and America were Christians. So they were great Christians, actually. But they knew that a war between Germany, the very, very military rich tradition of Germany and the power of Germany and the industrial might pound for pound. In the last 150 years, there's never been a nation per capita more powerful economically than Germany has been. You think about it for a minute. I mean, this small country, even before the Second World War, 80 million people were producing, they were a per capita level of industrial output, just more than anybody. It's true that China is a very capable people, and they are certainly passing up America and the West right now in their production. But the difference is 1.4 billion people in China.
Just a little different. Yeah.
So they knew that if there was a war between Russia and Germany, that Germany would prevail in that conflict. And if Germany prevailed, that's how you get rid of the Tsar. That's how you overcome the Christian Tsar and you put in a communist government. You hurt the image of that person. Here's you have a country where millions of Russians die in a war, and the guy that was head of Russia was an enemy, right? Obviously, Christian Russian. And that's how you pave the way for a communist takeover. And then you have a communist takeover, and then you kill 20, 30 million Christians, including, by the way, in Ukraine. I did a lot of research into what's called the Holodomor today. Holodomor. That's the name for the intentional famine, starvation, executions, ethnic cleansing, and gulagism that went on, which was run by the communists. It was actually orchestrated by Lazar Kakhanovich, who, by the way, his sister married Stalin in the early days. And Lazar Kakhanovich was Jewish. He was the first secretary, meaning that's the name that they use, this very, very mild name, first secretary of the Communist Party in Ukraine. He later became second secretary next to Stalin in the Russian government. He's the guy that tore down the great Russian Christian church, Church of the Savior. And as it was being destroyed, this is the iconic Christian church of Russia and the Christian faith and the Christian people of Russia. He said, there's Mother Russia stripped of her skirts, using almost a rape analogy or a rape metaphor.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are unbelievable. So they starved, you know. Well, the figures are, and again, I can give things people can check out. In fact, you can even find some of these facts in Wikipedia. You got to dig into it. They always lower any sort of Jewish death rate against Christians and Muslims or other non-Jews, and they always raise whatever the death rate was of Jews in any conflict in the world. And if you really start looking at it, in 2003, there was an international historical conference sponsored by the United Nations, and there were 24 nations of the top historians of the countries who were experts in what was called the Holodomor, the great famine and destruction and murder of 1932.
They call it the genocide, David. It's a genocide.
Absolute genocide. In fact, it was called a genocide by the man who authored the term genocide, and that was Raphael Lemkin. And Raphael Lemkin, he's the guy that created the term genocide, and he pointed out, in fact, I even quote him in my book, The Secret Behind Communism, where he says that literally they reduced the Ukrainian population from 80% to 60% in the face of a few years by mass starvation. And these were mostly, they had huge families in Ukraine. In fact, most countries did during that time, but Ukraine especially was a very rich country agriculturally. So the Jews who controlled Russia just came in. They confiscated all the grain. And they starved the resource-rich country, the amazing farming communities of Ukraine, and they starved the people to death. And, you know, the people that die first in a famine are the ones with the weakest immune systems. For instance, if you have a high metabolism, you're very subject. That's why kids get sick a lot and old people get sick. And then mothers who are trying to raise their children and breastfeeding their children and so forth. And if you have a famine, those are the ones that go first. But first, children. And I do believe that of the 11 million people that I think died, first of all, the United Nations Commission of 24 different nations, including the United States, France, Germany, England, and all the leading historians of the world, said specifically that the so-called Holodomor was between 7 and 11 million dead Ukrainians, 7 to 11 million. That was the joint decision. So minimum 7, and then they said maybe 11. Some actually said more, but the actual figure that they said, when my research, I came to believe it was about 12 or 13 at least, but million. But the interesting thing is, all right, now this was the United Nations conference, United Nations historians, 7 to 11 million. That's more the alleged murder of Jews in the Second World War are in terms of the so-called Holocaust, which is, you know, name applied for. There's been 80,000 references to the Holocaust in New York Times, totally Jewish publications. So why didn't the New York Times come with a warning label? This is a Zionist Jewish publication. This is owned by Zionist Jews, and they've been supporting communism, and they've been supporting, look at the George Soros type of thing, leftism and communism and Zionism from the very beginning. And what they've done is, you know, the reason why that they took over much of the Republican Party, and there were Never Trumpers all over the place. And of course, remember when I came along, if you read Vanity Fair in the last month, there's a book called The Broken Clock. And you can also, and they do a review of it. And they talk about the revolution that took place in the Republican Party. Now, I'm not trying to boast of this. I just want to tell you what Vanity Fair, I want to tell you what Forbes, I want to tell you what leading the New Yorker. Let me tell you what they said and what they did in talking about the Republican Revolution. And they said the person that really started this off, that was most responsible for it, in fact, they have a huge picture of me in the first page of their major articles, right, and this about this new book. They got a picture of David Duke up there. I don't know who that guy is. And and he was the first Republican that came out and said, hey, we need America first. We need to stop this massive immigration. It's going to end up making us a minority in our own country. It's a divide and conquer thing. We've got to stop this anti-European American discrimination. We have to treat everybody fairly, but we can't have a so-called affirmative action. We can't have this transgenderism and all this destruction of the family. And he was the first one that did that. And then I won election to the House of Representatives in Louisiana. Even with the President of the United States coming out against me, George Bush came out, former President Ronald Reagan came out. I mean, you can go on and on. Eventually, I unseated the sitting Republican governor.
Those are actually enormous endorsements, as you know. Now.
So, So when they said, you know, that's why they said that I started this out. And then Patrick Buchanan came in my wake. Remember, that's when he started running. And then even Trump went on Larry King. And you know what he said in Larry King? Now, he said later, you know, I don't know who that David Duke is, because he said, why, you know, he wouldn't denounce me at first, right? Well, one reason why he wouldn't, I think, was because I really helped him get elected president. Forbes magazine did a story of the 10 most important turning points that got Donald Trump elected to the presidency. And you know what they listed as the most important one? The first one that's listed, you could find it in Forbes magazine, the 10 facts that, you know, that led to the nomination and presidency of Donald Trump. First one was David Duke endorsed him. I really didn't actually endorse him, but I said I'm going to vote for him because it's just these other field of characters, right?
I remember this.
So the idea is that Donald Trump was in many ways, in terms of a character, different than typical Southern traditional conservatives and religious people, right? He was, you know, he had a reputation for dating porn stars and being audacious that way and sleeping with other people than his wife, all this other stuff. And he also was real brassy, you know, because most Southerners like people who are more just kind of in their own, more modest, you know, more the strong silent type, like the Bretts, the other people, like, for instance, in Gone with the Wind, if you can remember some of those characters, right? Yeah. Ashley is a good example of that. And he was loud and boisterous and pushy, and he acted like some sort of, well, kind of like a New Yorker, even though I met some pretty good New Yorkers in my time as well. But he acted like a lot of New Yorkers we've all known, and in a particular group of them. I guess he associated with them a lot. And but I said, I'm going to put aside those things. The ultimate importance is what a person is going to speak about, the issues that are so vital to us, and what a person is going to do about. And he promised to protect the border. He made his biggest issue, copying off of me. He promised to have trade issues that were fair to the American people. He promised on all these levels. And he actually did give a lot of promotion to the ideas that I was preaching and teaching. He said that when David Duke went on Larry King, he said, I watched David Duke and Larry King, And I tell you, a lot of people are going to be voting for David Duke because of what he's talking about. And I think that was why he chose those things. Now, he was a billionaire and lived a kind of a libertine life as well as a hardworking life. I got to give him the fact he's a good businessman. But there's no question that this process said this. If David Duke could do this, being a former Klansman, of course, why couldn't I do it being a former Klansman? A former Klansman, a little bit before my time, was Mr. Byrd, right? What was it? Mr.
Senator
Byrd.
Robert Byrd, you're talking
about.
The
head of the Senate, Democrat, right?
Yep.
And he was in the Klan. He was in the Klan a lot older age than me. He was in more active than me. And he said a lot of more, you know, things that I wouldn't ever say and pronouncements I wouldn't make. But he became a Democrat. Wasn't entirely a liberal, but he became a Democrat and not so conservative on a lot of critical issues. He definitely supported
it. It's amazing how the liberal media gave him a pass. They always gave him a pass on that.
Not that they gave him a pass. Do you realize that Hillary Clinton called him her mentor?
Yes.
That Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Vice President from Tennessee, Gore, they all came and gave eulogies. He gave a eulogy. You see, this is how it works. This is how you know how the media is so Jewish controlled. Of course, I talked about the Jewish issue and the real racism, the ultimate supremacism and racism in planet Earth today. The ultimate racist philosophy in the planet. It wasn't even National Socialism or what Jews call Nazism. It was really the aspects of hardcore Judaism. The Judaists, you might say, the Talmudists that crucified Christ and that preached this supremacy. In fact, that's another interesting thing. It's just as Ralph Limpkin invented the term genocide, I don't say I invented it. It was a natural word, an easy word to do. I talk about Jewish supremacism because that's exactly what we have in this country. Even David Brooks in the New York Times, as I talked about in the show many times, he said specifically, David Brooks in 2005, article in New York Times, The Chosen Getting In, and in there he talks about how the Jews have taken over America, the Jewish elite has taken over America. And that's
absolutely
what's interesting about And so that's what's interesting about Ukraine. We have a Ukraine war because we have a Jewish president. We had a Jewish prime minister for a time, graduate from my university. By the way, like I say, when they talk about me graduating from this very fine university, the biggest, they have a law school, they have medical school, they have all these things, right? And they're accepted by other universities as teachers and producers. And again, like I said, the conductor of the most famous really symphony in the world, probably the Vienna Orchestra, was a graduate of my university from the music school.
Vienna Philharmonic.
All of these people, though, they talk about, not a single one of 800 of my mic. I have a different, very strange setup here, just so we can get this to work. So they said next to my name, that's a mail order university. They didn't say it for the guy who they mentioned he graduated from my school for the head of the Vienna Orchestra. Yeah. They didn't mention it for
just
one
another
of the leading.
Cheap shot.
Well, they do that because that shows you, though, you know, if it was a mail order university, 800 famous people that Google and Wikipedia and all that list is accomplishing great things. And they list the university. They'll say it was a mail order university. But for me, they say that. And it's not a mail order university. It's a real campus. You have 42,000 students on their campus. You know, real classrooms, real buildings. I mean, it's a real university. And they've had a huge number of people. They've had graduates of the school who ran their education department in the country, who ran their and so many different engineering, so many different areas of Ukraine. But that's a good example of just how they do. Now, the point of all this is just to understand that what you said earlier in the program is so true. And this is one of the most tragic experiences I'm having in my life. I've gone to school there, got my doctorate there, taught there, to many wonderful students, and now I've known a few of them who are dead, who are impressed, forced into the military, yeah. And they're being put into a meat grinder. Now, from the very beginning,
it's a ritualized sacrifice. I don't know how else
any
to phrase
fool
it.
Could see.
There's no military justification for this. They don't have a chance.
We have to. There's no military. No, if there was military justification for Russia, 100%. Because
correct.
This is the facts on the ground, folks. I really believe in empirical knowledge and empirical the empirical scientific method is what put Europe on top of the world in technology. It brought us to the moon and many other things. If we did go there, but we certainly did a lot of great things technologically. If you don't believe that, I think we did. But the point is that empirical thinking is trying to understand what the true facts on the ground are. And the facts on the ground, the apparent true facts.
That requires proactive thinking, David, and that's what people are being trained not to do.
And research and honesty and courage. Sam, yes. But here's the deal.
Yeah.
All right, let's just look at the facts, okay? So Russia was a Bolshevik country under the Jewish power. Lenin was Jewish. And by the way, he pretended to be a Russian, even though he gave speeches talking about how Jews were the greatest people on earth. But he was really a Jew saying Jews are the greatest people.
Right.
Can you imagine that?
Because
effective, isn't it? Trotsky came in as for all these people. They're the ones who made the gulags. Solzhenitsyn shows the 6 top administrators of the Soviet death camps. A Jewish newspaper in Israel called Ynet News has an article by Sever Ploker saying how Stalin's willing executioners, and it says, quote, "We must remember that some of the greatest mass murderers in all time are Jews. Jews are only 1/5 of the population of planet Earth. But they're 25% of the one-fifth of a percent.
There. Thank you.
1/5 of 1%.
0.1%. 0.03% of the world population, something like that.
A little less than that. There's 0.202. So they're less, and yet they're 25% of the billionaires. This is not because those 1/5 of 1% has all the smarts or intelligence or works.
Nope.
No, it's because of their philosophy, their ideology, and their supremacism, where there is no group on planet Earth more ethnocentric, and ethnocentric is the right idea too, the right word. They are totally obsessed with their own ethnicity, their own history, their own interests, their own supremacy. They're the people of God and all these things, even though they don't even believe in God for the most part around the world, frankly. They really don't. In fact, even in Judaism, there are many atheist rabbis. But that's not the point. So the point is that when we really look at what's going on, see, the rise of communism killed more people than anybody else. And the First World War was the great, and the Second World War killed about 100 million people, told somewhere between from 37 million to maybe around 60 million, 70 million in the Second World War. And that's killed, just killed. That's not kind of hundreds of millions wounded, suffered, lost family members, homes, towns. The Germans, were truly holocausted. They were burned alive in their homes in their major cities, in the beautiful cities of Germany. In the end of the war, all the people, all the Germans, I have many friends. We got personal friends of mine for years. They're like family. And they came from Silesia. They came from what became became parts of Poland. But they had settlements there for hundreds and hundreds of years, 1,000 years. Germany actually stretched all the way from, of course, the east, from the Saarland, from north and west Germany, like Tsar area, to all the way to Königsgrad, which is Kaliningrad now. And all those Germans up along the Polish corridor, along East Prussia, every single one was ethnically cleansed in the middle of winter of 1944-45. And they were raped by the millions. I mean, it's one of the greatest atrocities ever. The guy that was in charge of these programs was a Jewish guy. He was their head of
propaganda. Raging psychopath.
Yeah,
incredible. Oh, the guy was unbelievable.
And he said, rape the German women. But it was
kill
like, so millions and millions of Germans. Of course, you don't hear about that Holocaust.
And let's not forget the other Holocaust that took place in Germany from 1945 to 1953. It's anywhere from 8 to 10, 12 million, some estimates, of Germans, the last of the German nationalists, were slaughtered, murdered, killed off. You never heard about it. It was completely obliterated in the Western media.
It's really sad to say this, but we didn't line up all the Germans and shoot them. But after the war, there's a great book by Backe called Other Losses.
B-A-C-Q-U-E, James Bach.
Right.
B-A-C-Q-U-E, Other Losses. One of the first books I ever read, David, that started me on the right trail to understanding real history.
And this is what I say. I don't get involved in the Holocaust question much. I do have a chapter in my book. I don't say definitively whether the Holocaust happened or not or what the numbers were. But I do say that any historical event has to be allowed to be questioned. And there's got to be freedom of speech on it, freedom of inquiry, freedom of debate. And there is none. And it's not.
You don't have partial freedom of speech. It's not possible. It's like being partially pregnant. You either have it or you don't.
That's exactly right. It's a tragedy. And Americans wrote about this. You know, this is another good example. One of the presidents, I had reservations about some of his policies. But one thing I can say about John F. Kennedy, he didn't want us to go to war and destroy all of humanity. He absolutely was against this. And he was also against nuclear weapons in Israel. I think that's why he was assassinated. And he was, you know, also very much concerned about this. And he also demanded that Jews leave that give Palestinians their justice. But he was, I think he was murdered by the Zionists. And I think there's Collins Piper wrote a great book about that.
Michael Collins Piper. Yes, terrific. Yeah. I think he may have been murdered too, frankly.
He was a good guy. I met with him a number of times over the years, came to Moscow, in fact, spent a lot of time with him. He got me in touch with Mahatma of Malaysia. And by the way, Malaysia was the country that was bankrupted by Goldman Sachs. And yet
let me say something about JFK, David, if I might.
Yeah.
You mentioned John Kennedy. He was taken over to Europe right after the end of the fighting. Not long, a month or two. I think one of the dullest people took him over. I can't remember, but he toured all over Germany. And he wrote in his diary, John Kennedy, 28 years old, Pacific War hero. He wrote, Hitler will emerge from the hatred that surrounds him now to be one of the most significant figures who has ever lived. He had in him the stuff of which legends are made. Close quote, John Kennedy, 1945.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you know, one thing about Kennedy, and this is another good example. Again, I like empiricism. I want to see the facts on the ground. So anybody can check this out. Anybody, they could try to prove me wrong, or they can try to say that I got to be making this up. But he wrote a book, a family's book, of what he called Profiles in Courage. And he wrote this book about Americans that he think exemplified the greatest examples of political courage by telling the truth about subjects that are unpopular. And in his book, he had a chapter on William Taft, Senator Taft, the Republican senator, who criticized and attacked the Nuremberg war trials. And he actually had hearings before Congress. In fact, some of the hearings they had sworn testimony from American, people who were there, Americans who were even running some of the processes and were quite ashamed of that this was going on and were whistleblowers. But to give an example, he gave an example of, say, we can't trust anything Nuremberg trials have because widespread horrific torture was going on a massive level. And he gives an example. Before Congress, they had testimony that said of the top SS officers, and by the SS was like the elite of the country, and they were the highest officers, pure records and whatever. Well, they endured, listen to this. He said of 124 of these tried, you know, on capital offenses or whatever, just tried for war crimes. Out of the 124, 123 had endured testicular torture and damage of the testicles beyond repair. Now, I can't tell you, but if you have to think about a torture that a man would be concerned about, I mean, so just if you have the power to imagine it, some guy sitting out there, a young boy or old man or whatever, just imagine somebody putting a pair of pliers on your family jewels and starting to squeeze. It's just unbelievable. This is the kind of stuff that went on. This was a stain on America. And also, he said it to him. He said it to the world this way: this is not justice. It may be called the International Court of Justice, but justice can never be wrought by a justice system where the accusers, where the person making the accusations, where the judge, the jury, and which also controlled the prosecution and the defense, because that's exactly what they did. Nobody could even go testify, otherwise they'd be trot up. It was the biggest slander of justice. There was one great member of that committee from Kansas. He was effectively on the Supreme Court in Kansas. He resigned. He said this whole thing is Semitic. It's just revenge. It's not justice. And it's but Kennedy actually wrote this in his book, Profiles in Courage. He showed that that Senator Taft was a very, you know, heroic man who exposed the unfairness. And he talked about some of these issues, which you could read for yourselves in his book, Profiles in Courage. Hard to believe it. It's interesting.
It's true. It's true. And if you study very diligently what happened after the war in Germany, it's a very much hidden part of history. The Nuremberg trials, for example, if you really do work, it was an entirely Jewish-run... It was a deadly circus.
It was a torture operation.
That's right.
It was a criminal... people talk about the Trump trials as being put up politically.
No, it was all Jewish. You got to look at the names. Look at the people who were the main components of
Henry Kissinger
trials.
Henry Kissinger. Now, Henry Kissinger was also a guy, by the way, that advocated use of nuclear weapons in Vietnam. That would open Pandora's box.
That's true. Yeah.
And by the way, we have to look at this really carefully, and this is pretty amazing. The truth is...
You have to look at it honestly. And carefully.
You know,
let's just go.
We're going to go right to Ukraine and give an opening foray this way, okay?
Yeah.
So what happened during the war, a lot of Russians, including Stalin, realized they were not going to win the war with a bunch of Jewish lawyers and Jewish propagandists. The only people who could fight and win the war were the Russian intelligentsia, which also had a famous military background themselves. And he realized they were not going to win the war or, you know, survive as a country by fighting for, you know, so-called the Soviet Union. No. He started talking about Mother Russia, right, mm-hmm. which is the things that the people like Kaganovich didn't like, you know, Mother Russia. But what he did was he used Russian nationalism. We're going to fight for Mother Russia. We're going to stand up for the Russian people and so forth, right? And this started a process of Russian feeling of their identity again after the Jews had taken over and killed so many millions of them. And so by the late 40s and early 50s, Russia, the Russians themselves started using the same kind of tribal tactics, defending themselves. Of course, they were 97% or 95% of the population of Russia, the Russian Federation, they said, these Jews have taken us over, and we are going to defend the Russian church. In 1950s, they restored the Russian Orthodox Church, Christianity. I mean, we can just keep going on and on and on. They made Zionism a capital offense. They took over. And as soon as when that happened, that's why we had the Cold War. Now, think of it this way. This is now. It got to the point where eventually the Russians were not going to tolerate a hammer and sickle either. They weren't going to tolerate Russia as the Soviet Union. By the way, the reason why Russia became the Soviet Union, which no word Russia in it or Russians in it, because he hated Russians. Solzhenitsyn writes about this in his great book, 200 Years Together. But the point is that once they overthrew the Jews, it was inevitable that communism would fall. Jews knew this in France. They knew this in America. They knew this around the world. And that's when they kind of shifted from communism to Zionism, because they realized they were losing control of Russia. And they did lose control. In fact, in 1990, of course, the Russians took over, real Russians. They dropped the hammer and sickle. They used the, you know, Russian, they revered, you know, the history of the Tsar, Christianity. They built, Putin built 60,000, you know, Russian Christians. That's why they hate Putin. It's not because he's a horrible, un-Christian, nasty person. It's because he supported Christianity in the country. It's like Solzhenitsyn and other Russians. I mean, this is the reality of it. And this is something that people must understand. That's why Russia's hated today. The whole thing about Russiagate's all lies. It's a lie. Now, Putin, as I said earlier, he's the only adult in the room. The only adult. And here's the problem of Putin. You say, well, the border has changed. And Russia, by the way, has won the war because they're winning a war like they know how to fight a war. And why people don't fight. If you destroy the army, you destroy the forces, you know, eventually you win the war. And the Ukrainians Correct. Are collapsing. And right. so they came in there. And it was like suicide of these people, of the Ukrainians. So here's the situation. So Russia overthrew the Jews, all right? And then they let. Now, listen, this is a fact. We're going to be empiricists right now. We're going to look at the facts on the ground. Yeah. So in 1990, Russia had the Iron Curtain. It's one of the most powerful nations on Earth. But Russian nationalists had taken over. And they endorsed the idea that Lithuanians, that Estonians, that that all these other countries, Poles, everybody should have the right to determine their own government, like they wanted Russia to be their own government and the Russian Federation in a joint operation that was done by agreement, not by force. They took out all their tanks, thousands. They took out their missiles. They took out their guns. They took out their artillery. They took out their armies. And they dropped, completely dissolved the Iron Curtain, all those countries. Now,
that's right.
That was not that necessarily good for them economically either, because, you know, because all that's going to cause trade and business and all that. But they did it as a principle, right? And the idea was that these countries would be neutral, just like they did the same thing to Austria even a few years earlier.
That's
where
true.
They said Austria will be allowed to, you know, be out of the Soviet Union, but as long as they agree to be neutral. Now, so when that happened, of course, and they also agreed to let Germany reunite. But Germany was not supposed to, you know, but Germany or Eastern Europe, Germany shouldn't be part of NATO because, again, they're going to let that country go. They were part of the Soviet bloc, right? So you think about this now. So let's look at it. Since that time, since the 1980s and 90s, since the 90s when the Russians took back their government from the Jewish power. And by the way, the Jews tried to take over again by the oligarchs. 11 or 12 of the oligarchs were Jews. But when that happened, okay, the agreement was that these countries should become neutral. Therefore, we would be much less likely to have nuclear war. We have nuclear weapons right in our water. We wouldn't tolerate it, right? Obviously. And so they were willing to do that. But NATO, run by Jews, and the Jews that controlled America. It wasn't America. It was the Jews that controlled America. And these Jews that controlled America, it was a Jewish supremacy in this country. It still is. Every day you can see it, 52 standing ovations for Netanyahu, a mass murderer. I mean, come on. This is unbelievable. Israel has committed terrorism against America. The attack on the USS Liberty. For God's sakes, the Levant affair, where they attacked, tried to bomb American
stations. How about that? How about the takeover of our entire constitutional republic by the money masters? Come on, they own everything. They control everything.
That's right.
Nothing is random anymore.
Who did more damage to this country in the presidential four years than any other individual ever? And you know who it was? It was Mr. Mayorkas. He was head of Homeland Security. He opened up the gates at
Tarp. Horrible. They're communists. These are Bolsheviks right here. They're Zionist communist Bolsheviks right here in River City. And FDR was surrounded by them. They never went away. They just kept consolidating their hold.
I think the way I would put it, Jeff, is that they've gone on a new tack. And they said, what communism was, first of all, itself, was an ultra-capitalism. In fact, they were ultra-capitalist bankers that bankrolled the communists, like Jacob Schiff. Right. We talked about that earlier. Yeah. Bankers, Rothschild, these are the people that bankroll communism. Communism is the ultimate evil of what capitalism is, of just money, power, ruling over everything. The ultimate capitalism. Because communism was the idea that this group of Jews can rob a whole country by getting control of it, right? In a dictatorship and a tyranny. And that's what they did in Russia. So they stole everything, right? So, but every day you hear about how the Russians are going to try to take over all of Europe. No, they let all Europe go free. Tell me since these countries were all let go in the Iron Curtain, did Russia go in and take over Lithuania? No. Did they go take over Finland? No. Did they do that to Estonia? No. Did they do that to Latvia? No. Did they do that to Poland? No. Did they do that to Romania? No. Did they do that to Serbia? Oh, not at all. Did they do that to Austria? No. Did they do that to even Ukraine? They were still allowed to have trade, everything, freedom and everything in their country. But of course, Ukraine didn't have the benefit of Vladimir Putin going against the Jewish oligarchs. But NATO moved and where they were going to put nuclear missiles on the border. Now, we talked earlier about what you talked about, the Hal Turner show, when they were talking about.
We're at the end. David, we're at the end of time. I'll give you 60 seconds. Go to it. Go ahead.
Okay. Listen. If this was happening, if Russian weapons going across the Atlantic into America and attacking
coming out of Mexico, for example, or Cuba,
wherever, Canada, Mexico, or from the ocean or wherever, right? And also, I think we've had a part to that in the Black Sea. But if this was happening, we'd just be about ready to go to war against the country. So. But Putin hasn't done much about that because he's trying with all of his might and all of his courage, and he can't stand the humiliations happening to Russia. He's trying not to get into another world war and have millions of Russians and millions of Poles and millions of Hungarians. The truth is, Putin loves the Hungarians, and he loves the Ukrainians, and he loves the European people. He served in Germany, and he loved the German people. I really do believe that. He doesn't want to kill them. He wants to make peace with them. So he's trying to be the adult in the room and say, you're taking some of this stuff, but we have to let you know that we're not going to take it forever.
I don't know how much longer they're going to take it. Also, Kyiv is considered to be almost like a St. Petersburg city in Russian history. It's been always Russian. People don't know that. That's one reason I think they haven't leveled it. Because it's valuable. It's got history. You were there. Anyway.
Yeah. Sure.
This is all critical. All right. Last quick question, and we are way over. But do you think there will be some kind of a substantial retaliation militarily against the UK, the US, and NATO for this outrageous invasion of Russia? Will there be something done?
I think Putin's trying to do everything he can to avoid that, but he realizes
they're
going to
push
him. They're not going to listen to anything.
No.
But a response. They got to realize that what they're doing comes with a cost. And it's a very tricky thing because if a mistake is and nuclear weapons are used at any point on either side, it will definitely end up with a crescendo, which could end all life. I mean, I'm talking to everybody listening. I guess that we are over, but this is a case. If we have a nuclear war, And we can certainly crescendo into that.
Northern Hemisphere is toast, at least.
Everything you love in your life, your wife, your children, your mother, your father, your grandkids, everything is over. And this is the greatest threat humanity's ever faced. And if it does happen, there's no coming out of it. There's nobody that wins that kind of a war.
No
winners. Putin's trying to avoid that. But these Jews are crazy people, just like what they're doing in Gaza.
These are ritualized sacrifices. I agree. David, we have to go. Thank you. That was a wonderful hour. Great perspective, as always. And continued good luck. Let's get through this. You'll be all right. We'll talk soon.
I'll be fine.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Good night. David Duke. What an impressive mind he has. We'll be back. Hold on.